What I like to say is we're not talking about accounting androids. We're talking about accounting cyborgs. You know, we're talking about the augmentation through technology rather than, you know, complete displacement.
Welcome back to Future Proof, friends. As always, I am your host, Bill Sheridan. Let's get some business out of the way first. This week's show is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors. And unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. Okay? Okay, now, down to the real business at hand. Today's show is all about innovation, which, I mean, let's face it, it's not something that our profession is particularly known for. We're all about yesterday, right? We're all about accounting for what has happened. What will happen? I mean, history tells us that's not our problem, except here's the thing, right? We're living in a world where we'll be flattened by what's in front of us if we don't take time to look for it. If we don't take the time to turn around and look for what futurist Andrew Zolli would call those weak signals of disruptive change on the horizon. And if we don't start training ourselves to look forward to what's next as much as we look back to what's happened, well, you know, we're doomed, just like anybody, I guess, to be honest with you. And here's why. A few years ago, the Sleater Group released the results of a survey that showed the top reasons why clients decide to leave their CPA firms. It's that their CPAs were providing reactive services instead of proactive advice. In other words, their CPAs were holding them back instead of helping them become future ready. And at the same time, CPA.com released a survey that found 92% of CPAs said they weren't prepared to provide that proactive advice. So to recap, our clients are demanding proactive, future-ready advice, and 92% of us aren't prepared to provide that type of advice. So that's a problem. And that's where this week's guest comes in. He's Jordan Kleinsmith. He's the Director of Innovation for the Tax and Accounting Business at Thomson Reuters. He's the guy who's keeping an eye on what's happening at the profession and figuring out how Thomson Reuters needs to respond in terms of innovative new ideas and strategies and products. Let's use artificial intelligence as an example. It wasn't that long ago that only the biggest organizations with the deepest pockets had the money to throw at a groundbreaking new technology like AI. KPMG became one of the first in our profession to throw their hat into the AI ring. I think that was early 2016, right? When they announced that they would begin applying IBM's Watson AI solution to their entire suite of professional services. And just 18 months later, solutions like MindBridge's AI Auditor, they have the power now of AI, and they're making it affordable and available to everyone in the profession. So things are moving fast. And Thomson Reuters knows that, and that's why they have people like Jordan Kleinsmith out there hunting for trends, so that they, as an organization, can stay on the leading edge. And we saw proof of that just recently when Thomson Reuters took its popular tax research platform, Checkpoint, and applied artificial intelligence and cognitive computing and machine learning technologies to it. The result is Checkpoint Edge, the latest version of Checkpoint that employs these technologies to deliver fast, more accurate answers to tax research questions than ever. And because it uses AI, that research platform gets smarter with every question you ask it, because it's using questions and data from hundreds of thousands of other researchers to deliver exactly the kinds of answers you're looking for. The Thomson Reuters folks are super excited about the possibilities that Checkpoint Edge offers, and with good reason. It looks like it could be another groundbreaking solution in a world that's advancing exponentially. And that's the kind of stuff that Jordan Kleinsmith does. And I was excited to talk to him because he's one of those people who are always looking out for what's next. So we talked a lot about the current and future state of tax. We talked about regulatory reform, what he's seeing in that area, because that's another ever-changing and complex source of angst, right, for the profession. And we talked about why he thinks this is the perfect time for accounting and finance pros to learn to become a little more anticipatory and innovative. So from a future-focused point of view, this was a great conversation. Lots of good stuff on the horizon here to keep an eye on. Here is Jordan Kleinsmith.
So Jordan, thanks for joining me today. Sure. You know, I think most people outside our profession anyway, and maybe quite a few people inside of it as well, wouldn't necessarily think of innovation when they think of tax and accounting.
Sure.
Tell me why they're wrong.
Sure. Well, you know, I think at the end of the day, innovation is really just trying to do new things or trying to do sort of the same things in a new and better way. And so when you think about it through that lens, I mean, you can really kind of apply that reasoning to really any kind of profession. But you're right. I mean, maybe tax and accounting is it the most sort of associated with major breakthroughs in technology. I would say, though, that one of the reasons why I think some of that might be, and I've heard other folks say this before, but I think that unlike some other industries, there might just not yet at least be the sort of urgency to really adopt some of this stuff. I mean, what I like to say is, you know, accounting firms are making a lot of money right now. You know, they're doing pretty well. There isn't sort of this necessity to breed invention that you might see in some of these other markets. But I do think we are kind of heading in that direction. And I do think that one of the really exciting things in my role, and some might see this as a bit of a cop-out, but I like this explanation of innovation from the Doblin Group, who came up with 10 types of innovation, which is really kind of a more sort of scientific approach to evaluating innovation activities. And one of the things that they say, which I think is a really good way to put it in the context of this industry and this profession, is something doesn't have to be completely new to the world to be innovative. It really just needs to be new or applied in a new way for a new audience for it to be innovative. And I think the exciting thing right now is there's a lot of stuff going on in the market at large, a lot of stuff with technology at large, and a lot of stuff even elsewhere in our own organization at Thomson Reuters that we can now leverage and apply to the accounting profession in a way that's really never been attempted before. And really do so in a way that's going to have some really big ripple effects, I think. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about some of those things that are going on. What's happening now that makes you think this is a perfect time to kind of be innovative in our profession?
Sure. So I think, you know, one of the things I know you folks do a great job of talking a lot about is sort of this idea of mega trends and the idea of like, what are these big unstoppable forces that are kind of barreling down on us that we really should, you know, to benefit ourselves, begin attempting to take some sort of action to mitigate or even, you know, turn into an opportunity and really make sure that we're not letting it go by. And I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of sort of more negative connotation challenges facing the profession that I think are going to make up the rationale for why this makes sense. Like, you know, commoditization of a lot of compliance service lines. One of the stats I just looked at recently, I was preparing some like eye-catching stats for a presentation, and I didn't realize it was this distinct in the figures, but I was looking up the IRS's e-file receipts over the past 12 years or so, where they essentially say this is how many e-files we've received for processing that came from a self-prepared tax preparer, or mm-hmm. how many a tax professional has sent in. And the increase in the DIY by the professionals themselves from 2009 to 2018 was 72%. Wow. And the increase over that same time for the tax professionally prepared or the professionally prepared was 27%. And mm-hmm. and the crazy thing about that is that includes the e-file mandate in 2010. So, I mean, it's really stark, some of these, when you really look at the data. But, you know, and we likewise have like the explosion of regulations to deal with, things like that. But on the flip side, and this is maybe looking at it from more of the optimist perspective, we also have this runaway technology in terms of what it's capable of. And I think the task ahead of us is figuring out where are the challenges sort of increasing at the highest velocity that we need to then focus our technology sort of attempted solutions in those same areas as well.
Yeah. So The technologies, the technology side, I'm kind of interested in hearing your thoughts on that and a little bit about what you guys are doing there. What, you know, how are technologies like AI, cognitive computing and all the other ones that we've been hearing about lately, how are they impacting what we do in this profession and how should we be responding?
Sure. So it's certainly one of those things that happens incrementally and it happens in pockets. One quote that I've heard, Tom Hood actually, a quote which I really like, I believe it's from the author William Gibson, which is, the future's already here, it's just unevenly distributed. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very much the story we see right now with a lot of these cutting-edge technologies, where you'll see them develop to pretty deep production-ready capabilities, but in very small pockets. So, for instance, right now, a lot of the big four firms, for instance, have very big R&D budgets as it pertains to AI and other solutions. But ultimately, they're doing a lot of that work in essentially a vacuum, where they're building tools really to their own benefit and giving them sort of market differentiation, but it hasn't yet sort of rippled out into the greater market just yet. And that's really the task that we at Thomson Reuters are attempting to take on, is how do we kind of take these technologies that are being put to use in these smaller scale applications and then make it available to a wider audience. Now, there's a lot of sort of challenges to going about that. I mean, one of the unique advantages that some of the bigger firms have, even over some of us vendors, is the access to the data and the ability to fully leverage that data and build some of the more sophisticated data models that are necessary to drive some of the predictive AI capabilities and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we are approaching a point now where we believe we're going to be able to start getting a lot of these more advanced capabilities out in a more sort of one-dimensional, any commercialized fashion. So one of the things that we've done to mobilize so far is we've actually spun up a number of different functions with different focus areas in our organization around to basically build up organizational expertise in these technologies. So we have our what we call our TR Labs organization, and that's really meant for doing a lot of the more front-end exploration and what you might call de-risking activities, where we really take the technology and push it to its limits in the early stages just to see what's possible as of yet. And we have a lot of things where we're just kind of looping through periodically on different things to see, is the technology there yet? You know, mm-hmm. Hasn't reached that point yet where we can finally tackle this problem. And so a lot of that work is done actually in partnership with customers, where we'll do co-innovation workshops and actually bring customers in-house to help guide us and make sure that we clearly understand, you know, what is the problem that we're attempting to use AI to solve here on your behalf, sort of as a representative of the profession at large. And then we also mobilize what we call our Center for Cognitive Computing. And the Center for Cognitive Computing is really where we attempt to take those early stage projects that we've kind of proven out and reached proof of concept stage and take it to an actual production ready product that we can put out into the market. So we actually have a number of these products in flight, a couple, you know, nearing release now at this point. And so we're entering a phase, I think, in our business where you'll start seeing more products that incorporate emerging technology releasing with greater frequency, mm-hmm. just by virtue now of having had this lead time to spin up our capabilities and whatnot. So I will say a major focus of our technologically is the umbrella field of AI or artificial intelligence. And that incorporates a number of different sort of sub-technologies that we've spun up a variety of different teams to really drill in on. And what we're attempting to achieve is essentially a collection of experts that all know the different technology stacks and what their best uses are for the different types of problems that we want to try to solve. And so the idea being that we can then go to that pool with our problems and say, here's what we're looking to do, what's the best technological approach that we might be able to take? And so the sort of basket of technologies includes things like more traditional rules-based AI-driven systems to more traditional or conventional machine learning, where a lot of times it's very supervised in nature, where a lot will employ subject matter experts to go in and tag the data and really train that. But increasingly, we're doing more by way of unsupervised machine learning, what a lot of folks will call, or one such flavor of which they'll call deep learning. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what deep learning consists of, and where I think we have a lot of really exciting, even short-term opportunities, is in solving what one of our data scientists described to me as sequence-to-sequence problems, as being sort of the most generic way to describe it. And essentially what those are situations where you have a whole lot of relatively consistent inputs, and then you have a whole lot of corresponding relatively consistent outputs. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things in our, and really the idea behind that then is, can we train a model and continuously refine and retrain it so that it can find the patterns on how it took all of these inputs and got it all these outputs? The goal being, can I feed a new input in and get an output that resembles what the humans would have done to create that output essentially? And I think there's a ton of processes in the tax and accounting profession that fit that model, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, taking source documents, producing tax returns, taking transactions, producing financial statements, you know, whatever it might be. There's a lot that I think can fit into that. And so what we're setting out on now is, in addition to some of these larger plays we have in flight, is doing periodic. We have a goal of doing a couple of these per quarter, where again, we bring customers in-house, we set out a challenge, we look at a set of data, and then we just kind of feel out, can we build a predictive model off of this or not? And then if we can, kind of take that down to the next phase of trying to commercialize it. So I'd say, you know, again, our biggest technology focus is that greater bucket of AI with an increasing focus in some of those sort of subtypes of technologies.
Wow, a lot going on. So we at the Business Learning Institute, we've been working recently with a kind of a world-renowned futurist. His name is Daniel Burris.
And oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, so he likes to, and you've probably heard him say this before, but he likes to talk about disruption in terms of hard trends, or anticipation yeah. in terms of hard trends, future facts, things that we know yes. are going to happen, and then basing strategies around that. And when it comes to our profession, he's kind of identified three hard trends that are not going away that we need yes. to start basing strategies around. And one, we've already talked about, technology. The other two being demographics. And then the third one is something that you mentioned a few minutes ago, is regulation.
Yeah.
So let's talk about regulation for a little bit, because sure. there's a lot going on there. And I mean, we've already seen a lot happening over the last couple of years with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Sure. I'm curious, has the hype started to die down around tax reform, or is that going to continue to be something that we deal with going forward?
Well, you know, I think it is going to continue to be something we deal with, at least for the short term, and maybe, though, not in the ways that we think we're going to have to deal with it. I think one thing that I will say in regards to Mr. Burris, I really respect his what he has to say about the future, and I wholeheartedly agree. And I think the one thing that I'm kind of holding out hope for is for something that another futurist I'm quite fond of talks about, a guy by the name of Ray Kurzweil. So Ray Kurzweil is very famous for having a pretty accurate prediction rate. I think somebody said his predictions, when you track them back through like 1980 something, when he started through today, it's like an 86% accuracy rate. But he has a concept he refers to as the law of accelerating returns. And so it's kind of the inverse of the law of diminishing returns, but it applies to AI. And the idea behind the law of accelerating returns is that as AI is growing and its capabilities are growing exponentially, it begins to facilitate exponential growth in other parts of technology, to the point where the exponent on the exponential growth of capability is itself growing exponentially. That's the way he kind of says it. So the my hope is that we can kind of leverage that to keep up with the pace of exploding technology and keeping it, or exploding regulation, I should say, and kind of keep it in check. Now, I don't know. Obviously, it's all conjecture, but I think theoretically, it stands to reason. And I think that the job is on organizations such as ourselves at Thomson Reuters to really dig into how it is we're going to take advantage of these explosions of in technology to keep up with it. And I think one in terms of the tax regulation itself, or the tax reform, I should say, I think everybody is feeling the crunch of all of this added work they've had to do. And I think that is a good thing to think about in the context of AI and in the future of this profession. Is my hope is it's that crunch that AI takes away, that it takes it off. Because everybody, you know, we have this idea of AI, you know, displacing accountants and whatnot. What I like to say is we're not talking about accounting androids. We're talking about accounting cyborgs. You know, we're talking about the augmentation through technology rather than, you know, complete displacement. And so I think we're on a path where we can continue to kind of double down on these to address some of the issues that we're seeing, you know, coming from this. Now, it's too bad, you know, the technology wasn't there to heal the crunch of this season. Right. But the hope is it will be in the future. But the other thing that I think is maybe more problematic that people aren't planning for is I think what the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, what it's really going to be doing in the long term is accelerating the commoditization of 1040 work. Mm-hmm. Because we have this short-term blip where everybody is freaking out and needing their, you know, help from the accountant to kind of get settled and whatnot. But when the smoke clears, the real question to be asked is how many individual taxpayers will now feel empowered to file on their own because they don't have a Schedule A anymore because, mm-hmm. you know, the threshold went up significantly. And then likewise, how many new Gen Zs, you know, this goes back to the demographics trend, how many new, you know, even millennials starting businesses, going out into the workforce, will go straight to DIY instead of even thinking to go to an accountant. So I think we have the sort of hidden danger of TCJA, as I see it, is even though it looks like an explosion of new work right now, over the next few years, it may end up, you know, pointing to a significant reduction in work. So I think what firms really need to be focused in on right now is looking at how much of my work, you know, if we consider this to be a bit of a hard trend looking forward, is at risk now. How much of my revenue in my firm is attributable to these 1040 return types that are most likely to be lost in the future, and then the exercise really becomes, okay, well, what can I do to replace that revenue? And so, a lot of the other big projects we're working right now is looking at what are other ways we can leverage technology to not just tackle the bottom line in firms and their efficiency and you know, dealing with you know, all these regs, but also their top line. You know, how can we find you new opportunities for advisory work that you're not, you know, thinking about yet? How can you unlock those amongst your existing client base and again start looking to replace some of that revenue that's probably going to go out the door here in a few years, no matter what. So, yeah. So I'd say that, you know, there are a variety of different places we're focused in on around tax reform, but I think the real story of tax reform might be a little bit different than what a lot of people think it will be.
Yeah, that's interesting. There's some food for thought there that I hadn't considered before. What else on the regulatory front has your attention these days?
Sure. Well, I would say, you know, we're certainly paying very close attention to some of the other non-income tax stuff. I mean, certainly the Wayfair decision has some implications for state and local tax. And so we're looking at the implications on that very carefully. Likewise, I think, you know, we're going to start to see in all likelihood additional regulation of people with any or companies more frequently with any degree of international transactions, I would imagine. I think there's going to be increased scrutiny and increased filing requirements and things along those lines. So, and we're already seeing it. We for instance, have a product line in another part of our business around managing international trade and all the embargoes that go around that, and, you know, restricted trade, things like that. So there's certainly a lot of other regulatory impact that's well beyond the scope of just income tax specifically, and likewise going into other areas that are either going to impact accountants directly or are nonetheless impacting their clients and might maybe even serve as opportunities, you know, for new services and things like that.
Yeah.
So we're trying to keep our fingers on the pulse of a lot of different things that are going on, not only in the US, but also worldwide.
Kind of interested, just real generally, from where you're sitting and from the work that you are doing there, what does the future of this profession look like to you?
Ah, that's a good question. I think, and you know what, I think I'll quote Tom Hood again, actually. he has a great one, and he may have gotten this from somebody else, I'm not sure. But it's the idea that if the accounting profession is to undergo a transformation, which I think everybody kind of agrees, that at the other end, they should expect to be not just doing things differently, but to be doing different things. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not going to be a scenario where you just kind of twist the lever a little bit on your processes for doing an audit. It's going to be a completely different service offering in all likelihood, you know, when we kind of exit this phase. So I think a lot of what the profession is going to look like is essentially a shift of where their skills most need to be. Now, it's not to say they still don't need sort of the core skills that we've always seen as being needed by a member of the profession, because there's always going to be the need for some sort of human check and verification. I mean, one thing we didn't get into is this whole concept of the black box problem, of which is where if you feed something to AI and you get an answer out, how do you know it got that answer? And so, like, right. And you know, that's a big question that's going to have to be solved, in particular for this profession that needs an audit trail for everything, you know, needs to tie everything back. And that's, right. You know, the sort of thing we're actively working on. But at the same time, for probably decades, we're going to need still the sort of those baseline skills to still, again, since the technology is serving as an augmentation, not a replacement, we're still going to need it. But we're going to need a lot more. And I think what that goes into is a lot more by way of knowledge of business operations, knowledge of particular niches. I think we're going to see a lot more of an emphasis on specialization, in whether it's on particular service offerings or in particular market verticals. Just because with those depths of expertise aided by technology, that's where I think professionals are really going to unlock really just extreme levels of profitability in the coming years, is see how deep on something I can go and see while doing that just how much I can leverage technology to make everything else that much easier. So I think, and what I hope to see is we're going to see more of like sort of specialized niche practitioners springing up. And my hope is in an era enabled by the cloud and cloud-based applications, we're going to breed a very collaborative ecosystem of sort of smaller niche practitioners collaboratively working with one another in service of a single client, and each of them expertly doing their piece and reaping maximum profit for doing it. And so I think what we're likely to see is a lot more by way of, again, just sort of a difference in the skill set profile that folks are going to need to be most successful in the market.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan Kleinsmith, this has been a fun conversation. Thanks
for your time. Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks for the time and insights. I appreciate you being here. Thanks.
Sure.
That was Jordan Kleinsmith, Director of Innovation for the tax and accounting business at Thomson Reuters. If you want to know more about Checkpoint Edge and how it uses artificial intelligence to help you spend less time searching and more time doing what really matters most to your business, you'll get the full story at tax.com. tax.tr, as in Thomson Reuters. That's tax.tr.com/checkpoint/edge. And remember, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs will need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. And we're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. That's all I got, gang. Have a great week. I'll talk to you next week.